Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Special Report. Negotiators are working on possibly extending a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. CBS's Natalie Brandt.
A Hamas official told CBS News it's looking to extend the pause in fighting even further, which could result in the release of not just women and children being held, but also men and abducted Israeli soldiers. The White House has said it wants to see the pause continue as long as prisoners keep coming out.
Hamas released 12 hostages today in exchange for 30 Palestinian prisoners. CBS's Lilia Luciano says they're heading to hospitals in Israel next.
Some have said that, and including doctors who've treated the hostages, have come out to say that they were malnourished, that they had poor diet, that the parents have said, look, my child lost a great deal of weight. They look pale. But overall, I mean, the hostages have been released in mostly in stable condition.
CBS News Special Report, I'm Monica Ricks.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
Maybe we'll have a cookie trade.
I like that idea. I like that a lot.
We'll eat them while we're on the show.
Because everyone loves.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. This year's gun deer hunt in Wisconsin is going down as one of the safest ever. Only three people were shot the entire 9 days. Warden Michael Weber credits safety education efforts and enforcement in the woods.
We're going to use the best data that we have to continue to reduce those incidents, prevent those incidents from occurring.
The harvest was lower than last year's by more than 17%. Experts say this year's season was a few days earlier than usual. There's more than $2 million in grant money in Wisconsin to help mental health services for veterans. The Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs is accepting applications for three grants. 16 Wisconsin nonprofits got about $650,000 in the last round. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now, here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WAUK News, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. Six warming centers are set to be open in Milwaukee, with other communities also opening up places where people can avoid the cold. The city-based program in Milwaukee has those six locations welcoming people this weekend. Right now, the Milwaukee Rescue Mission at 19th and Wells is open for those who are homeless and needing help. Temps will stay in the low 20s tonight, with a warm-up to the 40s tomorrow. Pleas for pledges and donations are coming from almost every charitable organization today. That includes the group raising money for the Waukesha Parade Memorial. A Main Street Memorial marker was unveiled last week, but work continues on a parade memorial at Greedy Park. The Giving Tuesday ask from Waukesha Parade Memorial officials says donations will help with the tile-based feature to be ready for next year's remembrances. And that's what you need to know. I'm Stuart J. Waddles, WAUK News.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here. I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
The Packers getting some players back. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Packers say that some of their players are coming off the injury list and could be ready to play when they host the Chiefs Sunday night. Defensive back Eric Stokes was injured on a special teams play in Denver. He was back at practice. Rookie receiver Dontavian Wicks has cleared the concussion protocol. NBA, it's the Bucks and the Heat tonight in Miami. The Bucks 12-5 so far for the season. College hoops, Wisconsin with a win last night at the Kohl Center, 71-49 over Western Illinois. Greg Gard said that Western Illinois played tough on defense.
We could not get into a rhythm, and that's what all the switching and the gumming up, it just makes it ugly, you know, because they're switching on everything. And so then it gets you to stand a little bit and not cut as hard as you should or screen well, so that we needed to come out of the gate better. We were able to make some shots and get some stops there and finish it out.
That's the Badgers head coach Greg Gard. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Mainly cloudy tonight with lows around 18. Southwest winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. High of 38. Tomorrow, partly cloudy skies. Low is around 27. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 18 degrees.
UPS Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Did you know this local radio station is part of Civic Media? Learn more about the entire network at civicmedia.us. Your home for the Devil's Advocates. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Tuesday edition. Dom, I got a debate in me, but not quite yet.
All right.
Because I'm feeling holiday festive in this regard. It's the time when a young man's attention turns to putting up the devil tree. Did you see the Mike Gallagher rep from Green Bay, Wisconsin, no, losing his mind?
Congressman Gallagher, yes.
Over the representation of the Satanic Church. In a full-blown display of like 62 different religions, but they got a problem with the Satan tree. Do they not know how inclusiveness works? Like, we find that particular tree very offensive, but the rest were down okay. Seems
strange. Well, I mean it's nonsensical in this regard. I mean, Satan is a Christian god. So if there's a Satan tree up, it's just another Christian tree. And we're talking about trees, right? These are Christmas trees, right? These are what, remnants of pagan religions. So not only are they criticizing their own religion, I guess, I mean, Satan is a Christian god or whatever you call him. He's in, you know, you read about Satan in the Bible, you know what I'm saying? It's paganism, man. So what's the worst part?
Well, Fox News's coverage of it, of course. Here are a few of the headlines from around the world on this very topic. The Satanic Temple of Wisconsin represented at the Festival of Trees. That's the outrageous headline at the Green Bay Press Gazette. And then there is U.S. Museum put Satanic Christmas tree on display. Again, nothing crazy about that. Satanist, here's the Catholic voice, Dom. Pardon me, Catholic vote. The Catholics, here's what the Catholics headline is. Satanists represented in Wisconsin Christmas tree festival display. And then here's Fox News take. Satanic Temple's bizarre inclusion at Wisconsin Christmas tree festival. You know, because they're not very broad-minded, Dom. Let's go to the Foxy News coverage for just a minute.
If you insist.
Satanic Temple's bizarre inclusion at Wisconsin Christmas Tree Festival sparks outrage. There's no neutral ground. Well, if you're representing religion, there are Satanists. I know you don't like that idea, but they're
are some out there, and there are some that just like to play that angle just because it bothers you so much. A Wisconsin museum is facing backlash after its annual Christmas tree festival included some controversial entries this year. Of the 66 trees on display at the National Railroad Museum.
666.
Just 66, Tom.
Oh, okay.
Of the 66 trees on display at the National Railroad Museum in Ashwaubenon, Wisconsin, the one that seemed to draw the most attention belonged to the Satanic Temple of Wisconsin and the Bay Area Council on Gender Diversity. No room for Satanist or gender diversity, Tom. The trees, which will be on display until December 31st, included decorations fitting their causes and not the typical ornaments depicting images related to Jesus, angels, or the Christmas holiday. Dom mostly puts up nude pictures of himself on the tannenbaum. The tree belonging to the Satanic Temple, Dom, here's what I like. They classed it up, much like I did with our devil tree a few years ago. If you'll recall, Dom, December of 2020, the state capitol here in Wisconsin was closed, and Republicans were making a big public display out of the fact that they were going to do some maskless Christmas caroling right in the middle of a COVID pandemic.
No matter what you think. In fact, what was it? Rep. Shea Sortwell said he was doing it for the people.
And they also
challenged him as why what they were doing for the people. He said, this is for the people.
And they didn't actually have a state Christmas tree that year, Dom, in deference to the fact the Capitol was locked down. So I brought my own. I figured if those Republicans were gonna make asses of themselves, I could double down on jackassery, Dom, and you join me there, and Fancy Brian, and even Alan Robinson, if I recall. And we showed up that day with a fully decorated and garland, beautiful Christmas devil tree. And the red garland really set it off. And the ornaments, Tom, I took the blue book pictures of every Republican state lawmaker and I cut out their photos and I glued them on a ball.
You really worked on that tree, man.
And then I gave them red facial hair, especially Alberta Darling. Oh, she had a full beard.
Oh, but who topped the tree, though, Michael?
Well, of course, the distinguished top of the devil tree, U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, the biggest devil we knew because he was voting against pandemic relief. He was the individual senator holding up the pandemic relief for all the American people. So he was the top devil that year, Dom. He had his honored place at the top of the devil tree. And, you know, there were some locals that were quite miffed by the devil tree. And they were going to take it down. One lady's like pulling ornaments off. Now, first I decorated these Republicans' tree. I put my garland on it and I put the devil radio stuff on it. And some Christian lady came down and started pulling my stuff off. I said, get your hands off. Like I had the authority to walk her back, you know?
Say it with confidence, Michael.
Well, anyways, it was just a short time later when our ornaments were taken off the tree. But they weren't above the red garland, Dom. They stole, in fact, our red garland. They kept our red garland.
Can you believe it? They took it. They took it. It wasn't theirs. They took it off the tree and they kept it.
And here's
that, they stole garland from a pagan Christmas tree. They
Satanic, if you believe them. I call it the devil radio tree. But
isn't there one of those things you're not supposed to steal?
It's like one of the Big Ten.
Oh, okay. So they did that. I guess irony, hypocrisy, not very clear for the Republicans.
Dom, I'm a little sad that we didn't think of this. The tree belonging to the Satanic Temple was adorned with red lighting and beads, pentagrams, and various ornaments, with one reading, Hail Santa, an apparent play off the phrase Hail Satan. You can't spell Santa without Satan, right, Dom?
That's right, Michael.
The gender diversity tree included pink and blue colored trans flags in the ornaments.
Oh, no!
With such sayings as protect trans kids. You can see why they'd be outraged. According to local NBC affiliate WGBA, museum CEO Jacqueline Frank admitted a number of local residents attending the festival had expressed concern over the presence of the trees, but also said some had praised their inclusivity. Others took to social media to air their grievances. We normally do that on the airwaves. Outrageous! National Railroad Museum features a satanic worship tree, according to Matt Betzel, executive director of the conservative grassroots organization American Majority, wrote in a post on X, including photos of the satanic display. Makes me want to drive up there and check it out, Dom. Now, the photos I see, I got to tell you, we had a substantially larger devil tree.
Yeah, much, much bigger.
This one's not even substantial, Dom. I mean, it's, you know, maybe 4 feet.
If that, it's tiny.
It's not a Charlie Brown tree per se, but it's just not, you know, a big old honking tree like the one I hauled down the street from the parking ramp over to the Wisconsin State Capitol that December day. And the most ironic part, Dom, that devil tree and the charges that came in the mail thereafter for entering a locked building
that were later dropped after we tried to
subpoena video? Mm-hmm. All the false Trump electors who also entered the very same locked building the very same week we did, you know, minus the devil tree, but they committed a conspiracy, Dom, some would say a crime. And when our little civil forfeiture matter came before the courts after dragging it out for like a year and a half, the DA dropped it the day before, I believe, Andrew Hitt's attorney said, please don't make him testify and entering a locked capital case. And that was exactly our intention, man. It would have been a dream Christmas, quite frankly.
Get him on the record. Crudy, a little bit, you mentioned the Green Bay press gazette. They did a write-up on this. Here's a little bit. Gallagher, the congressman from Green Bay, said this. It's impossible to overstate how offensive this is to Christians, and equated the Satanic Temple's participation in the Festival of Trees with waving a Hamas flag in a synagogue. Now, Crudy, the temple's mission is to, quote, encourage benevolence and empathy, reject tyrannical authority, advocate practical common sense, oppose injustice, and undertake noble pursuits, according to its website. The National Railroad Museum is a non-religious private organization focused on the history of locomotives. Now, if that's the mission of the Satanist temple, right? I mean, that doesn't sound terrible, right? And the Christians who claim the Christians are the ones who very often want to, what, suppress other people's rights, their ability to vote, to marry who they love, to marry who they want, to live their lives as they choose. The Christians are the ones that want to limit all that. But I digress. A little more from the Green Bay Press Gazette. Why was the Satanic Tree at a holiday event? The exhibition at the National Railroad Museum is an exercise in optics. Take, for example, the name of the event itself. It's called the Festival of Trees. Nowhere in its description does it explicitly refer to trees as Christmas trees, which invites all sorts of creative interpretations. A majority of the trees promote the businesses which decorated them. Internet service provider Bug Tussle uses the tree as the abdomen of its cartoon bug mascot. Green Bay Botanical Garden trees burst with wintry blooms. Another tree from Brown County's Community Development Block Grant Housing Program wears a hard hat in the place of a star. The Satanic Temple believes that religion can and should be divorced from superstition. As such, we do not promote a belief in a personal Satan, according to the website. To embrace the name Satan is to embrace rational inquiry, removed from supernaturalism and archaic tradition-based superstitions.
But you can see where the problem lies. It's the loss of faith. But to be satanic, a true worshiper of Satan, you'd have to be a faithful believer in something.
You'd be a Christian. Because if you don't believe in Christianity, you don't believe in Satan. Just saying.
Mike Gallagher, not really big on irony, Dom. More devil's advocates. We'll try to teach him, but, you know, he's a slow learn. 844-967-2789.
This is the Shaw, WAUK.
From the kennel to the coop, whatever the season, Fleet Farm has everything to keep your animals happy and healthy. From training your pup to sit season, to mastering those retrieval skills season. From clipping your horse for competition season, to keeping the backyard birds well-fed season. And of course, loving your pets like family season. There's a reason people say, if Fleet Farm doesn't have it, you don't need it. Because we have it all. Fleet Farm. Built for real life.
It's a wonderful Waukesha tradition and kicks off the holiday season. The 60th Annual Christmas Parade is Sunday, December 3rd.
Hi, I'm Don Brown. Join me live for all the fun. I'll be catching up with business owners, city leaders, and you before the parade even starts.
Your Waukesha Christmas pre-parade coverage is live Sunday, December 3rd from 3 to 4 p.m. and only on the Shaw 101.1 FM, WAUK 540 AM, and the Civic Media app.
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK.
The Devil's Advocates, making radio great again.
Welcome back to The Devil's Advocates radio show. Make sure you download and check out the Civic Media app. You can take The Devil's Advocates and all the shows on the network with you everywhere you go. To go to your favorite app store, look for Civic Media.
You know, I didn't randomly think of Satan trees. The reason I went there, Dom, the national Christmas tree hadn't even been lit yet. It's already tipped over. It's been blown over. The national Christmas tree is down.
Oh, man, down.
Get it back up. Here is what I think, Dom. Someone was checking it for like a noose and the structural integrity to hang Mike Pence.
I mean, that's what they said when they ransacked the Capitol.
Dom, did you realize that Mike Pence was willing to recuse from the January 6, 2021? In fact, he stated that was his intention. The Washington Post reporting today, analysis by Andrew Blake, the plot thickens on Mike Pence's January 6th recusal.
Uh-oh, the plot thickens.
The plot thickens. One of the least examined X factors in the January 6th saga is this, the possibility that Vice President Mike Pence might have recused himself from the counting of electoral votes in Congress. Given that Pence ultimately played a decisive role in thwarting Donald Trump's attempts to overturn the election that day, that some in Trump's orbit apparently gamed out and even desired Pence's recusal, it is valid to ask what might have happened if he had not been at the Capitol on January 6, 2021. Well, then Chuck Grassley might have jammed it all through down.
Yes, he seemingly would have.
We apparently came closer to finding out than we realized. ABC News reported Tuesday that on Christmas Eve 2020, Pence had momentarily decided against presiding, in part because it would be too hurtful to my friend. His friend that tried to get his ass hung on January 6th. He didn't want to
be there because it was too hurtful. That was after he did not partake in the conspiracy.
Now, ABC also reported that Pence had testified that Trump personally suggested he recuse. Did you know that? My source, the Washington Post here, Dom. Not feeling like I should attend the electoral count, Pence wrote in notes obtained by special counsel Jack Smith, according to ABC. Too many questions, too many doubts, too hurtful to my friend. Therefore, I'm not going to participate in the certification of the election. Now, Pence testified that he reversed course after a conversation with his son, Dom, who cited the vice president's constitutional duty, according to ABC. The date of that conversation is not clear, but it came at some point during a trip that Pence took to Colorado, which records indicate lasted from December 23rd to January 1st, and it, Dom, is the first evidence that Pence had actually leaned towards recusing himself and that Trump had personally suggested it. But it's hardly the first evidence that it was under consideration and that certain people on Trump's side had angled for it. We previously, we the Post, detailed the publicly available evidence on this episode, some of which was not received much attention. So here is how the new disclosures, Dom, fit into the timeline. You got some of this?
Yeah, man. An unknown date. Trump suggested Pence might skip the January 6th session of Congress, according to the ABC report on his testimony. In early December, Pence and his legal counsel, Greg Jacob, discussed potential recusal and whether Pence has a conflict of interest, according to testimony by Jacob before the J6 committee. Jacob said Pence asked him, has any vice president ever recused from the role of doing this on the grounds that they are interested in the outcome of the election? Pence's staff later reports back that Hubert Humphrey sat out of such proceedings in 1969, leaving the job to the Senate president pro temp. On December 13th, Trump lawyer Kenneth Cheesebro, we know that name, right? He's under indictment in Georgia. He's pled guilty in Georgia. He perhaps will testify against Trump in Georgia. But on December 13th, back then, he, in a memo, floats a detailed scenario in which Pence steps aside. The scenario cites Senate President Pro Temp Chuck Grassley or another senior Republican who agrees to take on the role of defending the constitutional prerogatives of the president of the Senate. That was on December 13th. 10 days later, Trump's lawyer Eastman, also indicted, writes an email to Cheesebro and others that references not wanting to constrain Pence or Grassley in the exercise of power they have under the 12th Amendment. And then also the same day, Grassley aide emails Pence and emails a Pence aide asking if there is any reason to believe that your boss will not preside over the Electoral College vote count. According to the J6 transcripts, Pence aide Paul Teller says it's not a 0% chance of that happening. And on December 24th, Grudy, Pence concludes he will not preside, according to his notes, as ABC reported, but sometime by January 1st, you know, on that vacation time, got a little family time, perhaps some prayer time. Pence's son, a Marine, persuades him to preside, citing the oaths they both took to support and defend the Constitution, according to ABC.
It's pretty bad, even for a grown son, when they got to come home at Christmas and say, Dad, do the right thing, you know, the constitutional thing that you swore an oath to, just like me.
No, but it would hurt my friend.
Dom, you may not recall this, but Charles Grassley set off a brief tempest by telling the media, this was on January 5th, if the vice president isn't there, and we don't expect him to be there, I will be presiding over the Senate. Now, a news report initially cast this as Grassley saying that Pence will be absent from the Electoral College certification, but his actual comments appeared to refer to a separate session of the Senate, which his office swiftly clarified. Now, they go down to basically say they don't think Grassley was in on the plan from the reporting and the evidence suggested. But at times, Grassley suggested the election was effectively over. On November 9th, his office took a local editorial board, told, it appears Joe Biden will be the next president. A few days later, he pushed for Biden to receive classified hearings in preparation for his ascension. When the Electoral College voted on December 14th, Grassley was asked whether he acknowledged that Biden was president-elect, and he said, I don't have to. The Constitution does. His office would go on to call Biden the president-elect in a December 22nd statement. So, Grassley did not join the handful of Senate Republicans and many House Republicans in objecting to the election results on January 6th. And after the Capitol riot, he praised Pence for refusing to kowtow to Trump's entreaties to overturn the election. In other words, Grassley would seem a less than ideal candidate for taking the unprecedented step of trying to overturn the election, a step that Pence ultimately refused to take. There's a little spoiler alert, Dom. At least for now, the reason some people angled for Grassley to replace Pence appears to boil down to the fact that Pence was not fully on board and that Grassley was next in line. Another possible reason is that substituting Grassley and having him help overturn the results might have looked less like a conflict of interest than it would for Pence, who would have effectively been reinstalling himself as vice president. You know, if that was the underlying plan. But Cheesebro wrote in a December 13th memo that politically this will insulate Pence and the president from what will happen next. For it is much easier for someone acting as president of the Senate to defend the prerogatives of the office if they have no conflict of interest other than a partisan interest, which is unavoidable. Let's not pretend we don't have partisan interests up around here, Dom. But
yeah, man, I'm about the truth of what you know, the Constitution. Wow. Pence, you think this is a precursor to his testimony against his former boss?
Well, his former boss is accusing him of colluding with Joe Biden. I think that means the Department of Justice. So I think they know how to smell a rat. Just ask Mark Meadows. More Devils. A great debate, perhaps, but only with your participation. 844-96-PARTY.
Keeping Southeast Wisconsin informed, engaged, and entertained. This is The Shaw. 540 AM and 101.1 FM. WAUK.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. There's more than $2 million in grant money in Wisconsin to help mental health services for veterans. The Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs is accepting applications for three grants. They'll go to funding emergency treatment programs as well as different kinds of therapies. Money is also available for centers with family and marriage counseling and social workers. 16 Wisconsin nonprofits got about $650,000 in the last round of grants. Former Wisconsin Attorney General Brad Schimmel plans to run for state Supreme Court in 2025. Justice Ann Walsh Bradley's term is coming up, and she said she plans to run again. Just like earlier this year, the 2025 race is expected to determine the court's ideological majority. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now, here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WAUK News, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. Milwaukee public health officials are expressing apprehension over a rise in COVID-19 instances post-Thanksgiving. A health official says there's been a 20% uptick in both positive cases and hospitalizations, although the figures aren't as elevated as the peaks witnessed during the initial virus wave. Officials say the ongoing presence of COVID-19 is a lingering threat. On this Giving Tuesday, state agencies are warning against scams. Some tips to follow when giving money are to verify that the organization you're donating to is legitimate by checking its website or social media for spelling or other errors, and to avoid making a payment over the phone if you're called. If you do donate, officials say to never use cash, a payment app, or crypto, as those ways of paying are nearly impossible to reverse if you find out you're a victim of fraud. And that's what you need to know. I'm Stuart J. Waddles, WAUK News.
Don't let biased algorithms or degree screens or exclusive professional networks or stereotypes. Don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
The Packers getting some players back. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Packers say that some of their players are coming off the injury list and could be ready to play when they host the Chiefs Sunday night. Defensive back Eric Stokes was injured on a special teams play in Denver. He was back at practice. Rookie receiver Dontavian Wicks has cleared the concussion protocol. NBA, it's the Bucks and the Heat tonight in Miami. The Bucks 12-5 so far for the season. College hoops, Wisconsin with a win last night at the Kohl Center, 71-49 over Western Illinois. Greg Gard said that Western Illinois played tough on defense.
We could not get into a rhythm, and that's what all the switching and the gumming up, it just makes it ugly, you know, because they're switching on everything. And so then it gets you to stand a little bit and not cut as hard as you should or screen well, so that we needed to come out of the gate better. We were able to make some shots and get some stops there and finish it out.
That's the Badgers head coach Greg Gard. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Mainly cloudy tonight with lows around 18. Southwest winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. High of 38. Tomorrow, partly cloudy skies. Lows around 27. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 18 degrees.
Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin.
This includes a commitment to news.
Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News, today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station. Your home of the Earl Ingram Show. Weekday mornings from 8 till 10 on The Shaw. 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
Charged, never convicted. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates radio show, the Tuesday happier happy hour, but I've got some sad news, Dom, and it affects my beloved Badgers. A story so breaking, so new, it didn't make it into Mike Clemens Sports Report. Running back Braylon Allen has announced he's leaving the Badgers effective immediately. He is declaring for the NFL draft. He will not play in the bowl game. He is done as a Wisconsin Badger. Here was his statement on his way out the door. Playing for Wisconsin and wearing the Motion W has been one of the greatest honors of my life. I am proud to carry on the incredible legacy of running back you and follow in the footsteps of so many great running backs. I've tried to represent UW and the state with dignity and pride, and I want to leave this program on even more solid footing than when I arrived, and I have no doubt the Badgers are headed in the right direction. Ah, but it would be nice if he stuck around at least for the bowl game, man.
Ah, come on. Congratulations, man. I don't blame him. It's a big honor, man. He's a talented athlete, and given the stakes, you know, every game you play is one more to your last. And with the injuries and all that, and does it even matter for the bowl game? Come on, you got to go be able to be your best to cash that check.
I'm excited to announce that I'm declaring for the 2024 NFL draft. You know, this kid's 20 years old. I think he's turned 20 now. He's so young. So young. First year, his freshman year, he's playing at 17. Should have been a high school senior. So this kid has effectively accelerated his process so he could make it to the NFL. And I mean, everybody knows that he was Sunday bound. But we're going to miss him.
Yeah, for sure.
I like him on my team. And here's the other grievance. I'll just throw one more random and then back to the politics. The Packers never draft the good Badger players. Never get the good ones.
Tony Mandarich. Oh, wait, he went to Michigan State.
There are so many great Badger players, especially on the defensive side of the ball, that the Packers never even considered.
I just did a quick search. Looks like the average NFL running back's career is less than 3 years.
3-4 years, yeah. He might be special, though. A, he's young.
He might be. He might.
And two, he's huge.
He bounces back. You heal quickly. And, you know, it's easier to do that when you're young. But, I mean, it's a brutal game. It's a tough game. And if he wants to get out and get after it and not, you know, take the chance of injuring himself in a game that doesn't really, really matter, I don't blame the guy.
Yeah, but the kids get the licensing dollars these days. I've seen him on Under Armour commercials, various commercials.
Sure. Yep.
So it's not like he's a broke-ass college kid, you know, selling dime bags like some people I know.
I give it all away for a little bit more, Michael.
844-967-2789. Braylon Allen is gone. He's going to the NFL. So I'm a little sad, but, you know, I'll get over it. 844-967-2789. Dom, I want to have a little conversation about Brian Style, the congressman.
Style to you, sir.
Central casting style? He does look like the stereotypical congressman, at least Republican style. But Style claimed on immigrants voting in a local D.C. election is mostly true, but not unprecedented. Now, what Stiles said, let me read the quote here. One of the perks of being a citizen in voting in local elections, but recent election cycles have put regulations under scrutiny. One such regulation has caught the ire of Republican Congressman Brian Stiles, who represents Wisconsin's 1st District. On September 28th, Stiles was speaking at an event of the Ripon Society of Elections, and his proposal, the American Confidence in Elections Act, easy for me to say, which could change the guidance the federal government gives states on elections. It would also change who can vote in Washington, D.C. in local elections. At the Ripon Society event, Stiles said, here's the quote, Dom, Washington, D.C. allows non-citizens to vote in the upcoming 2024 elections under current law. That's municipal elections. Think of the mayor of Washington, D.C. That means, just to give you an example of how crazy I believe this law is, an individual who's a Russian national, a Russian citizen working at the Russian embassy after residing in Washington, D.C. for 30 days, can walk out of the Russian embassy, have their Russian passport in their pocket, walk down to a voting location next year, and vote for mayor in Washington, D.C. and they don't even need to show their ID to do it, then why the Russian passport? But just setting that aside. So that was Stiles' statement. And the PolitiFact decided to take a closer look, Dom. So anyways, here's the point. It's mostly true. DC has decided that in municipal elections, local elections, non-U.S. citizens are allowed to vote as long as they've established residency of at least 30 days. And Dom, I think it's a pretty good damn idea. I think people should, even non-citizens, be given the right to vote in municipal elections. A, those are the local elections, and one must presume even some non-citizens are property owners. They work. They pay taxes. Whether or not our Republican friends want to acknowledge that, that happens all the time. So I'm for this, Dom. And I would point out, Brian Stale, you know, how hyperbolic could you be? Well, what about the Russians from the Russian embassy? You didn't have a big problem with the Russians when they were helping your buddy Donald Trump get elected. Although I find it ironic.
Well, and it's Canadians and Europeans and everybody else. I mean, it's not just Russians. All right, Curtis. So let's get to it, because I don't necessarily agree. Let me ask you this. You think it's proper and fine if they do it in local elections?
Local municipality should be able to set the standard for themselves.
Okay, but why stop there?
Because you live there, man. You're, even as a non-citizen, there are plenty of embassy employees in D.C., that are residents of Washington, D.C., whether or not they would have the legal right to vote in a federal election, because that's a different standard set constitutionally.
But it's the same concept, though, whether it's a national.
Well, you're not going to rewrite the Constitution.
Why not? If you accept the fact that non-citizens who may own land and engage in commerce and, you know, be contributing citizens to their local municipalities, that that's a something they decide to do. And I would agree, if the locals want that, then they should absolutely do that. But why would you not? What is it about that particular issue and them voting in the municipal elections that you would not, would you advocate for non-citizens voting in federal national elections?
I didn't make that advocacy. And that, again, is established by the U.S. Constitution, which would take 2/3 of the Senate and the House to change. Yes, okay. That's never going to happen.
Change the Constitution, but would you advocate for it? Do they not have the same right then, Michael? The same logic applies locally, in a municipal election, as it would on a federal election. I mean, everything aside, is there any limiting factor that you would suggest, no, they shouldn't do it on a federal level?
Well, the U.S. Constitution is the one I keep bringing to your attention, but you don't seem to have qualms with that.
Okay, so then let me ask you the question. Do you think we should change the U.S. Constitution to allow non-citizens to vote?
I don't think there would be an appetite to change the U.S.
Constitution. I'm asking you if there. Do you have the appetite for that, Michael?
And I'm straightly not answering your question, Mr. Salvia. I advocate for changing the U.S. Constitution to broaden this ability of people to vote as non-citizens? No, I do not. I don't think there would be a constitutional appetite to push it through the Congress. Certainly, we wouldn't get any Republican support. Look at the aforementioned Brian Stiles. So I'm trying to be realistic here. In a municipality, and this used to be the case under Wisconsin law, back when the state of Wisconsin was founded, you know, non-citizens were able to vote here. You had to establish 6 months of residency, historically speaking. But if you lived here, they wanted you to vote here. And I'm not clear why we wouldn't want people with a vested interest in the outcomes civically involved, other than the fact that this breaks the whole Republican narrative about immigrants. The damn immigrants, the others got to blame them for everything.
Of immigrants. So again, I would concur. If a municipality at like Washington, D.C. decides that this is how they want to govern themselves, I'm all about it. Absolutely. If anybody else wants to go down that road, and collectively, if we as a country decide to amend the Constitution and change that, and that's what we decide to do, okay. I mean, that's what democracy is all about, in my opinion. Now, generally speaking, I don't think that non-citizens should be voting about, you know, foreign, you know, that things that would involve foreign policy, for example. So no, I don't think, while I'm fine with it on the local level, we're talking about, you know, parks and streetlights and whatever, you know, roads, those kinds of things. Yeah, those are, you know, those impact everybody. But if you're not a citizen of this country, I don't think we should go down that road on a federal level. And I'm struggling with this. I asked you this question, Curry, because I don't know what the delineation is. Well, it makes sense to me on a local level, but I'm a little more concerned and hesitant about it on the national level. We don't have a world government. I can't go to Italy for a month and all of a sudden, well, I guess I don't know this, but I'm assuming I can't go to Italy or I can't go to another country, reside there for 30 days and then be able to have my input on, you know, local municipal politics.
Depends on how much money you have to invest in real estate, because they're very liberal in some of these foreign countries about establishing dual residency. If you just buy enough real estate, invest enough money.
Always seems to be the case.
Let me try an analogy. Maybe this analogy would set it home for you, Dom.
All right.
Boston, 17-something. You'd be out in the harbor throwing the tea back on the boats, because you're just fine with taxation without representation. Seems like we had an American Revolution predicated on the fact that you cannot tax us without representation.
Where does that logic then dissipate when you talk about federal elections then?
Well, just the appetite for actually making it come true.
I'm
trying to sell you right now, man.
I'm talking about your appetite, but the same problem applies. I mean, yes, taxation without representation. Well, if you're not a citizen, and you're visiting here, you're paying taxes. Does that mean every visitor who comes to this country who pays taxes should all of a sudden have the right to vote? No, of course not.
Are they job creators? Because then you think Republicans would probably extend the right to vote to them. You know, Elon Musk, do you think he gets to vote, Dom?
Is Elon Musk a citizen?
I don't think. Not originally. He's from South Africa, right?
Well, Canadian Rob wasn't a citizen until he became a citizen. So, I mean, you can become U.S. citizens and you can engage in a federal voting. And again, I understand, especially like D.C., you know, I'm talking about a population there from all over the world, man. And so if that's how they decide to do it, I absolutely support that. Now you got guys like Brian Stile going to come in and this Confidence in Elections Act. I mean, if you guys and your leader of the Republican Party weren't out there, you know, lambasting everybody and lying to everybody, and if Fox News wasn't out there lying to everybody, let's remember, they're paying out almost $1 billion, and they got more suits coming. You know, we're talking about people that have been feeding misinformation, alternative facts over and over and over because their guy lost. Because, you know, elections committees had to make difficult decisions during a worldwide pandemic to go out and vote. Drop boxes were used for years. I mean, these things, again, I digress. But for a guy like Brian Stile to slide that in, and by the way, all these, you know, confidence issues we have in elections and D.C., you can't do what you yourselves have decided you want to do. I don't like that.
What if it was Madison? Because, you know, we're kind of liberal around here. What if we, as a local community, made this decision for our local municipality? Would that stand up in the state of Wisconsin, do you think? Or would Robin Voss and the team lose their freaking mind? They're not down for local control here, Dom. Well, they've demonstrated that over and over and over again.
Control that allows for non-citizens to, you know, partake in voting in local issues. The Republicans would not be down for that whatsoever, in my opinion. But for me personally, if that's what whatever municipality in Madison decided to do, why not? No, I mean, D.C. has its own kind of jurisdictional thing, so I don't know how that would play off into the, you know, local municipality.
Are you kidding me, Schmales? We don't even have control over our own water in the city of Madison, thanks to Howard Markline, Joint Finance Committee. He doesn't even serve in this district, doesn't even touch this district. And yet he gets to decide, apparently exclusively for the state of Wisconsin, that we as a community with four big-ass lakes don't get to set our own water policies. They can only be done on a state level because there is no freaking local control. So if Madison wants to set its own voting policies over Howard Markline's dead body, I'd
only
say
one way to find
do
out,
it.
Michael.
Got an opinion? Join us. 844-967-2789. Bye, Braylon Allen.
The Shaw, WAUK.
This is Mean Gene Okerlund, and I'm talking with Brett Uhlberg, owner of Robert Hack Diamonds. Brett,
I hear you pay cash for gold.
Not only gold, but silver, diamonds, and any form like jewelry, teeth, coins, flatware.
Why should I sell you my gold?
Why not? Our store is the only store that recommends you shop around before you sell. This way you know you're getting the most money. But if Robert Hack Diamonds can't beat a competitor's offer on your scrap gold, we'll give you $20 just for letting us try.
Hey, what if I'm shy?
You? Well, at Robert Hack Diamonds, we sit with you at a table. We go through your items and make you an offer. You're not pressured, and we offer more on jewelry that we can resell.
Can I trade my gold for a new piece of jewelry?
Of course you can, and not only that, we can custom make a piece of jewelry using your gold and gems.
Hey, there you have it, folks. Sell your gold to my friends at Robert Hack Diamonds. Visit them on 76th and Layton in Greenfield. Robert Hack Diamonds, where they want your business.
This is the Shaw, WAUK.
The Devil's Advocates may not agree on much, but funny is funny.
Welcome back to the Devil Advocates Radio Show, our last segment of the day. If you got something to say, hit us up right now on the lines at 844-967-2789. And keep that dial locked in. Maggie Dawn, the Maggie Dawn Show, coming up at 6.
Don, we've received a few political texts and a few sports texts. Here's one. The news that Braylon Allen has declared for the NFL draft will not play another Badger game. Jeff from Sherwood said, sad but not surprising, Crudy. Another texter says, Braylon Allen is making over $400,000 in NIL. That's licensing dollars. He'll make another couple million in the NFL deal for 2 to 3 years. Why not stay and set some records? He's number nine on the all-time leading rushing list.
Oh, I get him. It's not going to pay him anymore when you bust a knee on a bowl game for a trophy? No, dude.
Here are a few of the political texts. Remember, if Republicans are spewing, you can bet they're doing it. They're spewing it. They're doing it. And one more from Jeff. I hate it when mom and dad argue. Interesting question, though.
It is an interesting question. But I defer to the locals. If that's how the community decides they want to do it, then what's the harm?
Republicans never defer to the locals, Tom. They never, ever, never defer to the locals. There is an op-ed today. If I can find it, I'm going to throw it at you. An op-ed today talking about local governments address local needs, and the GOP has a problem with that. Dave Zweifel at the Cap Times locally. Here's a closing thought for the day, Dom. I read, the recent Greater Madison Chamber of Commerce Forum featuring 7 Dane County mayors exposed just how severely the Wisconsin legislature has undermined local government in this state. That's the government that Republicans used to claim is best because it's closest to the people. But since the advent of Scott Walkerism, which still permeates the legislature, state government has imposed severe restrictions on what locals can do to address the issues unique to their municipalities. Republican legislatures don't want those liberals in the cities enacting policies they don't agree with. Hell, they'll tear down the whole UW system to prove it, Don.
No, come on. What are you kidding me?
Don, while the forum focused on affordable housing shortages that all 7 cities are experiencing, it addressed numerous examples of how state meddling has been suffocating those governments closest to the people. Here's a quote, Dom. Stoughton Mayor Tim Swadley. Dane County has provided over 30% of the growth for the entire state of Wisconsin. Ooh. And that's why we're having these conversations about childcare and transportation and housing and those type of issues. We're carrying the water for the state of Wisconsin. And we need to continue to let our state legislators know that we need more local control. In her story in the forum, Cap Times Natalie Yar reported that the Madison mayor, Sadia Rhodes Conway, agreed, calling on the business leaders who attended the forum to advocate for housing, transportation, and more. We need you to be standing up for local government, for the priorities in our community with the legislature, because they're not listening to us. And it's possible that they will listen to you, the Madison mayor said. That's pretty sad when you got to ask your constituents to go talk to Republicans because they don't listen.
The Greater Madison Chamber of Commerce Forum, yes.
As Dane County continues to grow at a record pace, public transportation has become another example of hamstrung local control. The Walker-led legislature deemed it wise back in 2011 to effectively abolish regional transportation authorities that would have been able to make transit plans for sprawling regions, let's call it Dane County, Dom. Their aim was to make sure Milwaukee didn't pursue transportation options that they would have included in the city's sprawling suburbs, but they also limited how other regions, including Dane County communities, can interact with the Madison bus system.
Cody, mayors of neighboring cities regularly ask Madison to add more bus lines to their shared routes, the mayor said. We're working as fast as we can to train drivers and build out a larger system. And as long as our partners are willing to continue to invest in transit, we're going to try and provide it, the mayor said, adding that it would make so much more sense to have a regional transportation authority rather than a collection of deals between cities. The Wisconsin Budget Project noted several years ago that the GOP-dominated legislature has passed 60 measures limiting the authority of local governments. In addition to the abolition of regional transit authorities, lawmakers constrained the ability of counties, municipalities, technical college districts, and school districts to set property tax levels, place restrictions on local ordinances that protect tenants, and limit landlord authority, limited the ability of local governments to impose residency requirements on employees. And those are just a few of the dozens of other restrictions signed by Walker. The bottom line is that legislators are effectively subverting the will of local citizens to deal with the enormous issues facing them. It is time to remove the shackles, writes Dave Zweifel, editor emeritus at the Cap Times. Find it at captimes.com.
You know,
it's to me, this is the Republican way, though. This is the way, man. This is the way. They impose it, their will upon anybody. That's what they want to do. It's not a live and let live. It's not, well, we don't want this transportation in our community, so you can't have it in yours. That's it. Why would you limit that? Why would you limit the ability of people to engage in their own self-governance on a local level to,
Dom? Because they can. Because they had the votes and they had the Senate and they had the assembly and they had the governor's office.
Okay, you can do it. What's the upside? If you have the ability to increase efficiencies, for example, that saves money. Aren't the Republicans about money? What is the upside for these things?
Well, here's one of the upside, Dom. According to the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign reporting May of 2015, Dane County would be prohibited from making wastewater, sewage, and other water quality decisions under a proposal inserted in the proposed 2015-17 state budget at the request of developers, according to a Republican lawmaker who sponsored the measure. Now, he didn't ever tell us who the developers were, how much he got paid, Dom. The non-budget item was approved 12-4 on party line vote by majority Republicans on the Budget Writing Joint Finance Committee. Howard Markline of Spring Green, which ain't that close to Dane County, Dom, a committee member, said he introduced the policy change, which applies only to Dane County at the request of developers, whose names he could not remember. But he cashed all their checks, though. You wonder why we don't get local control? Because someone's getting bought and paid for it. I would point at Howard Markline and others.
By the locals, man. Right? That's local control, just a different kind.
Thank you all for listening to what has been proclaimed the greatest radio show ever. We believe them when they say it.
That's true. It is true.
A close second, the Maggie Dawn Show. It's next. And then Educated Educators Talking Education. We got the Busted Pencils coming up at 7. Milwaukee Bucks playing tonight on the Civic Media Network. Tune into your local station. And thank you all for listening. We'll do it again tomorrow for your listening pleasure.
Waukesha, home of Les Paul, our awesome farmers market, and The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
The Green Bay Packers call Lambeau Field home, but did you know the stadium has a history all its own? It started with where to build it. Residents on both sides of the city wanted it. Officials argued there had to be room for growth. Eventually, farmland was purchased, but in Ashwaubenon. The bargaining continued, and in 1956, the land was annexed to Green Bay. Green Bay City Stadium became a reality the following year and was renamed in honor of team co-founder and coach Curly Lambeau in 1965. For Civic Media, I'm Terry.
You are listening to The Shaw, WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha,
and always streaming.